It is an honor to be with you this morning on this All Saints Sunday, always a significant time for us to worship together. Chicago newspaper columnist Bob Green writes some years ago about a 10-year-old girl named Sarah Myers, whose grandfather had died. Sarah's mother said,
I know I'm getting old, but I don't think I creak quite like that. We'll start that again. Chicago newspaper columnist Bob Green writes about a 10-year-old girl named Sarah Myers, whose grandfather had died. Sarah's mother said he hadn't been feeling well for some time. He went to the hospital for some tests just to find out what was wrong. He died 2 weeks later. Sarah, unfortunately, was not able to go to the hospital to see her grandfather before he died. She never got the chance to say goodbye. Sarah saw him regularly because we lived close to where he lived, her mother said. This was her first experience with death. We could tell that as upset as she was additionally upset because she didn't see him in those days before he died. She didn't get to have that one last visit with him. Sarah didn't say much about what she was feeling, but one October day, she came home from a friend's birthday party with a helium-filled balloon. She went into the house, her mother said, and when she came out, she came back carrying the balloon along with an envelope. Inside the envelope was a letter she had written to her grandfather. The envelope was addressed to Grandpa Bernie in heaven up high. In the letter, Sarah wrote, "Hi, Grandpa, how are you? What's it like up there?" The letter ended with Sarah telling her grandfather that she loved him and that she hoped somehow he could hear what she was telling him. Then she tied the letter to the helium-filled balloon and let it go. In mid-December, a letter arrived addressed to Sarah Myers and family. The letter bore a York, Pennsylvania postmark and had been mailed by a man named Donald Kopp. The letter began, "Dear Sarah, family, and friends, your letter to Grandpa Bernie Myers apparently reached its destination and was read by him. I understand they can't keep material things up there, so it drifted back to Earth. They just keep thoughts and memories and love and things like that. Donald Kopp found the balloon with the letter attached while he was hiking near the Pennsylvania-Maryland border. The balloon traveled almost 600 miles from Illinois through four states before resting in the south central Pennsylvania forest. Sarah said, at night I would think about it. I just wanted to hear from Grandpa somehow. And in a way, now I think I've heard from him. Donald Kopp is a 73-year-old retired receiving clerk who just happens to be a grandfather, too. And so it is in this spirit we gather to remember those saints who have gone on to glory. And we give thanks to God for the contributions that they made in our lives. In our gospel lesson, Jesus told a story of 10 bridesmaids. Half were prepared and half were not. 5 bridesmaids brought enough lamp oil to last the evening, even if there was a delay. The other 5 didn't. Now, in ancient Jerusalem, the day of a wedding was spent in entertainment and festivities. The actual wedding feast took place at night. In the late evening, the bride was escorted to the bridegroom's house with a parade of torches. The bridegroom was not yet there, but was anxiously awaited. At last, the message would come to announce the bridegroom had arrived. And at this point, the bridesmaids rushed to greet the bridegroom, followed by his friends. The bridesmaids would accompany the bridegroom into his father's house, and then the ceremony would take place, followed by more festivities. Usually, if the bridegroom was delayed, it was because of the negotiations with the relatives of the bride. Spending too little time in these often spirited discussions could be taken as an insult to the bride's family. A lengthy bargaining was flattering to the bride and her family because it showed how reluctant they were to give her away. Apparently, the groom in Matthew 25 cherished his bride and didn't want to upset his future in-laws. The negotiations went on till midnight. The bridesmaids anxiously waited for the announcement of the groom's coming, but he was delayed. The bridesmaids who thought ahead brought enough oil for their lamps just in case. The other bridesmaids didn't. During the delay, all the bridesmaids fell asleep. And then suddenly came the shout, "The bridegroom is here. Come out to meet him." The bridesmaids woke, but only half of them had enough oil to keep their lamps burning. The others had to find a merchant who might sell them some more. Meanwhile, the groom arrived. The five who still had lamps welcomed him. And then the whole party was ushered into the groom's father's house so the wedding could begin. Unfortunately, when the others got back, the wedding had started and the doors were locked. Now, people in the early Christian church, that is, after Jesus' death and resurrection, interpreted this parable to mean, be prepared for the second coming of Christ. They expected the Lord to return soon after his resurrection, and they understood this parable to mean to be prepared at all times. Many people understand this story that way, and I have no problems with that interpretation. But there is also another way to view this parable. It is very likely the original followers of Jesus understood this parable to mean, first of all, be prepared to stand strong if the times call for it. Secondly, be prepared to keep the word of the Lord. They are the ones who always have a sufficient supply of oil for their lamps. And finally, be prepared in your faith for opportunities to serve and to care for others. In the light of this theme, to be of service to others, which is one of the seven habits of Christian living, and also in observance of All Saints Sunday, I share this illustration with you. Her name was Margaret Hawkins. She was not a tall person, and there was nothing about her that would cause her to stand out in a crowd, except her smile and the fact that she drove a 1960 blue Dodge that had no rust. Her husband, Ralph, died during the first year of my ministry in Casper, Wyoming. Although she had been involved in social ministry concerns in the past, this loss caused her to be even more involved with helping the less fortunate in Casper. She would do grocery shopping for the elderly. She regularly called on shut-ins, and she was generous with her financial resources, both at church and in the community. And then there was her third grade Sunday church school class. To be in Mrs. Hawkins' class meant you were loved and cared for, carefully taught, and most of all made to feel that you as a pupil were very special. There, too, she taught concern for others. And all her students were involved in collecting canceled postage stamps for the Tabitha Home, a Rocky Mountain Synod benevolence cause. And when her congregation became involved in resettling two young persons from Vietnam, she became their adopted grandmother. Margaret died of cancer some years ago. But maybe in these few verbal brushstrokes, you can picture the kind of life she lived and why I point her out on this All Saints Sunday. Our emphasis this fall has been to look carefully at our seven habits of Christian living. These habits provide a challenge and a goal for all of us. This morning, I have tried to underscore the habit of service. And Christian service is nothing more than giving hands and feet to the gospel of Jesus Christ. The parable of the five wise and five foolish maidens provide us a reminder to be prepared to serve. And we can do this in a multitude of ways, in our workplace, at school, at church, in our communities. And then one final note. We had a rather severe warning in our Old Testament lesson for the day. Amos, a Hebrew prophet of the 8th century BC, speaking for God, warns his people, I despise your festivals, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. So what was the problem? Well, God's people had only paid attention to themselves and neglected the needs of the poor and the weak and the powerless. The habit of service was missing, and that message comes to us down through the ages. Brother John entered the monastery of silence, and the chief priest said, "Brother, this is a silent monastery. You are welcome here as long as you like, but you may not speak until I direct you to." Brother John lived in the monastery for a full year before the chief priest said to him, "Brother John, you have been here a year now. You may speak two words." Brother John said, "Hard bed." "Well, I'm sorry to hear that," the chief priest said. "We'll get you a better bed." The next year, Brother John was called by the chief priest. "You may say another two words, Brother John." "Cold food," said Brother John. The chief priest assured him that the food would be better in the future. On his third anniversary at the monastery, the chief priest again called Brother John into his office. "Two words you may say today, Brother John." "I quit," said Brother John. "Well, it is probably for the best," said the chief priest. "All you have done since you got here is complain." Now, why would I share such a dumb joke with you? Particularly because of the fact that Brother John says, "I quit." And one of the problems that I have, I don't know about other preachers, but I have, is ending a sermon. How do I do it? You can't just quit. And I was fussing about this at home, and my wife, Margaret, said, "You know, I remember an old All Saints hymn. It comes from an Episcopal hymn book. Maybe you could use that." And so, in honor of this day, I share that first verse with you, and it's now on our screens, and it goes like this. "I sang a song of the saints of God, patient and brave and true, who toiled and fought and lived and died for the Lord they loved and knew. And one was a doctor, and one was a queen, and one was a shepherdess on the green. And they were, all of them, saints of God. And I mean, God helping, to be one too. Amen.